Welcome to episode 215 of Redboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbeal, and today my special guest is close friend of mine and friend of the pod, Marshall Sterling. Me and Marshall go over three races from this past Saturday at the fairgrounds. Those races are 9, 10, and 12. And some angles that we talk about are, by using the in and out pattern, you could see Red Route 1 was sitting on a big race. And also how I'm Very Busy was the class of the field based on who we ran second to last time out. This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story in this tugboat. We go back and forth. We go back and forth. It ain't good for me. What we do this for? We go back and forth. Won't do this no more. All we want, always have a tell it. 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 All we want. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this first episode of this week of Redboard Rewind, one of my closest friends, someone who has been on In the Money plenty, it's Marshall Sterling. Marshall, how are you?
I'm doing well, Spencer. How are you?
Glad to have you back aboard. As we were just talking off air, it seems that I picked the right weeks to have you on. The last time I had you on was a good week. This week was as well.
Yeah, for some odd reason, you keep deciding to bring me on whenever I randomly have good weekends. But no, this weekend, for whatever reason, I was seeing the ball really well. You know, I connected on a couple pick fives, and if I'm doing that, then you know the pick four, pick threes, and doubles are all in the mix too. So, you know, for me, this weekend was definitely a really really good weekend. And will hopefully be able to fund me for a little bit until I crash and burn again.
I feel like it's always hard with these type of days because a lot of people will just hit the withdraw button. They'll take money out, which I think is always a smart thing to do. But as well, it's always hard when you have these big days because you want to jump up in stakes and you want to play, you know, maybe that $30-$40 win bet and you want to turn into an $80-$100 win bet. And I feel like just from reading books and just talking to enough people, I think that everyone thinks that they can bet more money, but there's that mental hurdle. And I think it was a lot of, Cramer books, et cetera, people like that, Dick Mitchell, who always say, you know, you're going to come up and finally figure out there's a price that is just too much for you, where instead of just, you know, getting nervous about, like, you almost feel ill about that type of making that much of a money wager, and you can work through it. But it just takes a while and a longer time to do it. Have you kind of noticed that, like, after you have big days, maybe you do try to bump up a little bit and you kind of realize, okay, I went up a little bit too fast. I have to kind of, you know, bring us back down to earth here a little bit.
So I take every day and every track differently, right? So if I'm doing really well, let's say, you know, we're covering fairgrounds. And so, you know, if I'm doing really well at fairgrounds, then I'm going to treat that differently than I would, you know, Gulfstream or Aqueduct or Santa Anita, what have you. So the amounts that I'm betting, if things are going well at a track and I'm seeing the ball well and I have strong opinions, then that's when I will up those amounts. I'm not going to up it for Gulfstream or Santa Anita if I'm not seeing the ball as well or if my opinions just aren't as strong. So even though, you know, I easily could have had, you know, my fairgrounds day, you know, bankroll, you know, some of the other opinions I had for the other tracks, I leave those budgets separate. And I do that deliberately because in my mind and how I work, I need to have those stop gaps in place. Otherwise it's super easy to go, oh yeah, I can do like $100 action bet. Yeah, screw it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I did that a few times and now I have no money. Dang. So I keep things very separate and deliberate in that sense, just because of how my brain works. I know that wouldn't work for everyone, and yeah, I'm a fairly neurotic person, so that's why I tend to have to micromanage everything that I do a little bit differently. But that's what has worked for me in limiting that loss effect, right? Because otherwise, just as much, just as fast as you're winning, you can lose even faster. And so I try to play those things accordingly.
I feel like that's such a key point, though, because I also, you know, and the neurotic part about it, you know, whether it's, you know, the ADD focus for me or some of the stuff that comes from it where I just get hyper-focused on certain stuff. But if I realize that, you know, over a week of races, let's say I'm playing, whatever, 26 to 25 to 30 races a week, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm, you know, 48% on sprint races, but, you know, I'm 8% on routes. I mean, the next, very next week, I may not even play a route race live, and I'll just practice the route races after the races are done that day. But you best believe I'm hitting at 48% on sprints, and I'm picking Chalkwell plus also hitting the live ones, you know, in that, you know, 4-1 to 9-1 range. I'm pretty much playing every sprint that week, and I'm just going to let the chips end up where they fall, because I'm hitting it, you know, 35-40%. Even if I hit two medium mid-priced horses, I should be making money that week, especially with me now taking off all of those route races. And, you know, at that week, you know, if afterwards, if I'm practicing, and, you know, for people, listen, I'm not saying, you know, I personally am not looking at results. I'm trying not to, you know, at least before the races, looking at it. You know, obviously I'll watch a race or two if I just think it's going to be the chalk immediately, and I won't count that. But, you know, let's say I play, you know, 8 or 10 routes that week in practice, and I realize, oh, I hit, you know, 3 out of 10. Okay, well, I took that week off. I still made decent money. Now I can kind of, you know, limp back into the pool on routes, but, you know, maybe I'm not playing $10 win bets. I'm playing $5 win bets. And that's how I think with you, the same way, the stopgap. If you're not doing well at a race or a track, now listen, if you're just doing bad at a track in general, I would just pass that track and just watch it pretty heavily, which I know is hard for us as a group of gamblers to not play but watch. But, I mean, listen, tomorrow's opening day for baseball. I won't be playing every baseball game, but you better believe I'll be looking at every single box score afterwards to see where I can find an edge for the weekend. The same thing kind of goes for horse racing.
Yeah, definitely. And, well, and again, you know, everyone's going to be a little bit different, but at least find what works for you. Ultimately, you know, for me, I tend to do better on turf races, than dirt. And especially I'm not, great with synthetic, even less so, but, you know, so for me, again, this fairgrounds card where the turf course is going to be a little more fair, and is a, you know, a little more of a typical turf course that you'd see, you know, in Europe, that a little bit deeper grass and just a much nicer turf course than, say, Gulfstream Park or, you know, or the like. So, you know, for me, those are the types of tracks that I tend to attack a little bit more, just because I'm a little more confident in my ability to see the ball better than, you know, the DURF at Gulfstream Park. You know, similarly, you know, Tampa's turf can be hit or miss. You look at Colonial Downs, that turf course is really nice. So, you know, there's a lot of different tracks that will have, you know, certainly more variability just based on the surface itself.
I've always made a joke between me, my father, and our close friends here. It's, you always hear about people who say, like, oh, I do better on turf than dirt. If you're having a lot of problems with dirt, especially like in this time period of the year, focus Oaklawn. And I think that the fields are big enough. It's all dirt. You only have to worry about, you know, sprint route dirt races. You can really model it well, I think, by looking at, you know, what kind of different pace runnings are winning the races, you know, who's, what kind of running lines are winning each and every race. And you can just focus, you know, watch all the sprints in one day. You know, if it's, you know, I think they race Thursday, maybe they also race Wednesday, I'm not 100%, but, you know, take a Monday, take a Tuesday, if you're not playing to begin with, and just watch all the sprint races one day and watch all the route races the next day. And I think that for people who struggle on a surface or whatnot, even if you're not playing every surface, you can go on DRF and just watch the replays of all the turf races in a day. Oh man, you know, one racetrack, it was all speed. The other ones, it was coming from the back of the pack. The more races you watch, the more you can understand. And I'm not a big race replay guy, but I think in order, you have to still watch races to understand whether you're taking notes or not.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, and obviously there's There's, you know, services out there that that are super useful in that sense as well. Obviously, TripNow Pros is one of those that's really good. But, you know, there's a lot of different ways to be able to gain an edge, especially on the replay side, like you said, to literally just look for patterns, see what you see. And maybe there isn't any. Perfect. If there isn't a pattern, guess what? Still a pattern. And you can still, you know, either A, say, okay, I can't get a read on this. I'm not playing. Hey, that's great. No big deal. You know, and those are the types of things, right? You know, some of the most important advice out there is knowing when not to bet. And it's hard. It is so difficult. But that is such an important, very, very important piece for you to be a positive player.
I think if more people, and listen, like we talked about, if you play the pick four, play the pick five, etc., you're probably playing doubles and pick threes as well. For me, if I play a pick four, I'm out the rest of the sequence, unless if my main win bet of the day is in that sequence, and I'll always play those horses as well to try to pay back my pick four ticket. And in that way, too, you just don't have a lot of, you know, you don't have a lot of excess of your bankroll. If you're betting, you know, in one day and 20% of your bankroll is already in the pick four or pick five, and now you're betting, you know, an extra 5 or 10%. You have 30% of your bankroll on the line. You're not going to make money. The takeout is too high. You need to be playing. If it's 10 races a day, find three. And it's always hard. If you're going to find three, I don't mean just find, you know, three races. Find three bets. Okay, you're going to bet pick five. Those five races, you can find two more bets within there. But then you're done. So, I mean, if you play the early pick five and brick and you play the early double and miss, you have one play the rest of the card. And that's so difficult for people to do. If you can play a higher variance, you're probably playing a lower percentage of your bankroll.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. And to your point, right? You know, if you're going to play a pick five and a pick four, pick threes, you're going to play doubles, you're going to do all of these multi-leg sequences, you got to be right. Otherwise, you're going to go down in a hurry. I'll be a broken record. And a lot of the smart handicappers.
I think as well, when you look at it too, if you're going to play five or six things leading in through a pick five, you have to play a smaller percentage of your bankroll. Like we just talked about, don't say, oh, I'm going to play the pick five. But if it misses, first of all, you should be playing the pick five for less than what you're playing a win bet for anyway. I know that the ticket prices go up, but you should at least be playing. You're playing a $40 or $50 pick five, which it shouldn't be anyway. You should be always paying, you know, if you're playing that low of a ticket, you should be playing doubles or pick threes with your friends and all that to try to play against these bigger tickets. Because if you play a $50 ticket, you might hit every once in a while, but everyone else has your combos usually 5 to 10 times already, and it dilutes your ticket so, so badly. But I think we're going to get more into that as we talk real quick about our first race, race number 9 from the fairgrounds. It is the New Orleans Classic, 1 1/8 miles on the dirt. You and me kind of talked off camera about how well we thought these multi-legged bets played. This is 9 through 12. In this race, it was so difficult, right? Because for me, I'm looking through, Touch Upon a Star. I'm over this horse. Listen, Delta Downs ran well enough in the fairgrounds, 2 back. Hasn't faced company like this, and horses are very good. Red Rat 1. Three times betting the money in 5 starts and graded stakes. You know, Gasoline was 1 for 3. I think when you look through the rest of the field in the mine shaft, you know, we have Money Supply. It ends up being one of those in here have not really been, you know, at this type of level. And so for me, when I saw Money Supply, I just thought this horse has been on a wet track. Is this horse as good on a wet track anywhere else? Well, he's 4 for 8 on fast, and they pretty much have the same top figures. So I thought maybe if this one finally gets a dirt track, we get back to that Churchill race 4 back with a 94, you know, and the mind here was super, super interesting. I did not want Touch Upon a Star. Best Actors, another one, Flavian Pratt on the outside with Brad Cox. I'm not taking horses, you know, listen, a head away from being 3 for the last 3 has been so favored in every single race. I'm going to let that type beat me. And so I thought for me, this top pick, Money Supply, was mine. What about you, Marshall?
Yeah, so for me, for my pick fours and pick five, in And I did play a backup ticket with one added, but so my top pick was Red Route One in this race. This horse is a classic in and outer. You look, every other race he either improves or decreases from a speed figure standpoint. And if you look at In and Out Theory, he was out in the mine shaft. So that means we got it. For me, that was my top pick. I thought that from a buyer standpoint, the horse fit really well. I mean, this was a really competitive bunch where everyone was in that kind of, mid buyer kind of looming standpoint. So for me, Red Route One was my top choice. And my second choice is Touch Upon a Star. Reason being, yes, Touch Upon a Star has faced state bred competition for most of its life, and certainly, going from restricted to open, and especially in a stakes category, you don't know what you're going to get. You never know what you're going to get. But obviously, the horse had the best last out buyer on a slow pace. It was a muddy track anyway. And I felt like from a distance standpoint, the horse is 2 for 2 at a mile and an eighth. And you look at these other horses, and that mile and eighth record just really wasn't that good. Red Route One, although 2 for 4, that second place finish, which was in the Oklahoma Derby, was by a nose. So from my viewpoint, not a whole lot of people actually wanted to go the distance. And I thought that the distance was going to be kind of a limiting factor. You know, Money Supply was 1 for 2 with a second. And so for me, I thought that those two were probably the most likely to get the distance. And so that was, on my main tickets, that's where I went. I did have a lone backup, which was Super Corinto. I honestly couldn't get a read on this horse, right? Won an optional claiming 62 at Gulfstream Park, and then all of a sudden we're going to the Dubai World Cup. And I don't know why. I don't see it, but obviously they had a lot of confidence, a lot of confidence going into that race to even contemplate trying to bring that horse back after a long layoff. So for me, I use Super Grinto as a lone backup, but otherwise I was very heavy on Red Route One and Touch Upon a Star.
Red Route One, Touch Upon a Star for Marshall. For me, I'm just going to go with good old Money Supply. Let's see who gets done in this grade two right now.
For the New Orleans Classic, presented by Reline, GI by Haggard. And here's Best Actor coming forward, along with Velociter in the orange cap. Also right there between horses is Black Belt. And Touch Upon a Star has come away in front now for Tim Thornton. Touch Upon a Star will be the Louisiana bred leader into the first turn. Right there in between horses is Black Belt. And on the outside, close up is Best Actor, who's going up and after Touch Upon a Star at the 6.5. It's Touch Upon a Star, who leads by 3/4 length to Best Actor. Velociter and on the outside, Black Belt running in fourth. Gasoline is fifth. First run since the Dubai World Cup for Super Corinto, who's next in sixth. Then comes Money Supply, and Red Route One has dropped back to last. The first 2 of 9 furlongs covered in 23.16 seconds. The 11-time winner to track down Touch Upon a Star. It's Touch Upon a Star, who continues to lead. Best Actor, who stays close with the front runner there for Flavian Pratt. Touch Upon a Star, Best Actor, 1-2, with a half mile to go in the New Orleans Classic as Velociter looks to draw in from third. Black Belt is fourth, Gasoline off the rail in fifth. They have just over 3 furlongs to run. Money Supply in the teal, launching a bid with the rail now for Tyler Gaffalione. We trail back to Red Route 1, Super Corinto being asked to pick up 3 furlongs from home. The trailer, Happy American. Half mile in 46.87 seconds. 3/4 for Touch Upon a Star with Best Actor right there in 1:11.17 seconds. They turn for home. Best Actor runs at Touch Upon a Star, and these two square off, coming down to the final furlong. It is Touch Upon a Star, Best Actor, and these two continue to battle hard for it. 1 furlong to go. It's Touch Upon a Star, Gamely, Best Actor, Red Route One switched out, and here comes Red Route One, who's slightly lugging in as they come past the 16th. Touch Upon a Star determined, but for Joel Rosario, Red Route One went past Touch Upon a Star. Red Route One, 1/2.
And it is Red Route One going back in form. 101, the winning buyer. 1180, the winning mutual. I think everything you said, I mean, it's always nice when you have a winner in a race, sometimes it's by pure luck. You know, yes, you're still handicapping, but like, I think every note you gave in this race was just like you had this race just figured out to a T. Distance limitations, in and out theory. When both of those hit, this horse runs away well. Touch Upon a Star, I'll say, ran probably better than I thought it would run. Money Supply kind of ran a good third at 5-1. I can't be too upset. Best Actor, not so good at 5-2. I think when you look at the top three here, Red Route 1, absolute play against next time out. Touch Upon a Star kind of showed he can hang with this group, but I wouldn't want to see him against any killers next time out. I think Money Supply just needs to, you know, find the right trip in this race.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, and I think too that from a class standpoint, I think that really helped Red Route 1 be able to get there, right? If you look at any of the horses that were closing from far back, very little were actually doing so well. You know, Red Route 1 and Money Supply being the only two that were really able to make up any ground in the lane. But you had a lot of horses that were kind of merry-go-roundy or just faded, right? Black Belt was trying to challenge for the lead, faded to last. You have Best Actor, faded to fifth, right? Even Velociter, whom Pride of Minnesota, Alan Bill Allwelling, Hunter Allwelling, let's go. Velociter, I thought, actually ran really well too, although it felt kind of one-paced, but to get fourth. But you know, ultimately, you know, your point, I really don't want Red Route 1 out of this race, and I do think that Touch Upon a Star is going to win some graded races coming down the lane. I thought, actually, to your point, did a really ran a bang up race.
The one horse in here, and for everyone who was always a big class handicapper, like Happy American had all these big time races in grade twos and grade threes, and you know, had a couple placings throughout the last 10 races. But just this kind of goes to show you have to kind of be in form and not just be the class of a field to do well in here. You know, like you had said, Velociter 19-1 is probably the one that's a little bit interesting coming out of this race, but. Other than the top three, I mean, One Chalk ran bad, and, you know, the 7 and 8-1 shots didn't run all that well either. So I think when you come down to this race, I think it kind of comes down to Red Route 1, pass next time, Touch Upon a Star, might be able to handle this type of field, and Money Supply is just going to keep giving you a nice try here, you know, obviously at 5-1, and you're only losing by, you know, three lengths, but, I mean, that still to me is a decent type of race when you're going to get 5-1, because once in a while you're going to find a win here and get that $12 mutual.
Yeah. I mean, everything you said there is spot on. And, you know, like I said, you know, depending on the race that Red Route 1 and Touch Upon a Star, you know, go into, you know, I may fade or press going in, but no, you know, the two things that are quite clear is that half this field doesn't want to go this distance, and the ones that you know are going to be that typical mile and an eighth or, you know, shined on the day.
Let's move on to the next race number 10 from the fairgrounds, the Muniz Memorial Classic, 1.8 miles on the turf this time. Super fun race. I'm going to go over real quick on the outside, and Marshall will beat me over the head with this later when he gives his critique. I'm very busy coming out of that race in the race at Gulfstream with 100 Buyer. Yes, lost by a length, was 14-1, lost to Warm Heart. Everyone knows how good Warm Heart is. I thought the post might be a problem here, and I just wondered, you know, when you look at the rest of the field, 89. The best number out of this horse was a 92 back when it was the Belmont Aqueduct situation. And I just wondered, maybe this one off a big, big race like that, they had this one prepped up and they go. Chad Brown's not the one to just lose focus off of that, but I thought maybe I could get someone else pop up, be a little bit interesting. Thought Web Slinger off a new buyer top. Did lose by 3 lengths, but at 9-2 in this race against a horse I knew was going to take a ton of money, I thought I could take a shot here with Flavian Pratt, who also is very, very solid on the grass. And when you look through, you know, just 89, 93, 96 is going to be closing like a bat out of hell, but I just thought this one was improving at the right time. I thought the one right to its outside beat box, Joel Rosario, Sherry DeVoe, coming off that soft race here at the fairgrounds. I just wondered, the last four races have been here. This one's going to be acclimated. Loves to run second at the fairgrounds. One win, 3 seconds and 4 starts. But A lot of times people look at seconds as a negative. For me, at least shows this horse can be competent in this race, and they like to put this horse in at the fairgrounds in competitive spots. I kind of liked Web Slinger and Beatbox. All right, Marshall, time to tear me to shreds.
Nah, so, you know, Web Slinger, let's start with him. This horse, if you look at those PPs, you see, oh, close second, oh, close third, oh, close second, oh, close third. This horse finds every which way to lose. Every way. Every single time finds trouble. And, you know, you watch those replays and you see this hard charging, just beautiful stride down the lane, never gets there. And I mean never. And so for me, I have no, I tried to get Web Slinger in the Hollywood Derby. And that was my divorce. I was done after that. You know, Web Slinger had every chance, and just never got there. So for me, I divorced him. going into the Gulfstream race, looking at Warm Heart being a true grade one horse, I thought I'm very busy in that race, losing by you know a half. It was such a good effort, and you know really didn't have anything go his way. And was able, you know, even getting, you know, bumped and a troubled trip in that race, was still able to get up, and damn near nipped Warm Heart on the wire. And so for me, I thought that race alone, if I'm very busy, came close to that, given the pace scenario, which I thought there was probably three or four horses that really were going to go to the lead, including Chad Brown's other one, Adamo. I thought that there was zero chance that this horse was going to lose. And I mean, absolutely zero. Absolute class of the field, and it wasn't even close. You know, the other horse that you talked about, Beatbox, you know, Beatbox has had some okay races, but again, I just don't think that he's this type of class, right? You know, you look, you know, was able to win at the fairgrounds in a grade three. Who did he beat? Strong Quality and Johnny's Fireball, who are the speed of this race. Beyond that, you look at his the previous races, you know, second in an 80K allowance, second in a listed stake, second in a listed stake. So for me, if I think that I'm very busy as a true grade one animal, I have no business playing any of the other horses in this race, given that there isn't any single one of them that has really shown that level of ability. So for me, I was all in and I'm very busy.
I'm very busy. The icy single for Marshall. I'm going to try and beat this one with Beatbox or Web Slinger. Let's see who gets the job done in the Muniz Memorial right now.
Off in the Muniz Memorial Classic, presented by Horse Racing Nation. And from those outside gates, Woods and Water with Risk Manager. Also toward the inside, there's Strong Quality. With an early bid, Gigante is front rank along with Johnny's Fireball as they make their way toward the first turn with Johnny Velasquez. Strong Quality to the early lead from Johnny's Fireball staying near Gigante's over toward the rail with Rising Empire in fourth. An early break to toward the inside at Hamo in fifth. Risk Manager is sixth with Irish Aces running in seventh. Beatbox is eighth as they go to the back of the course. I'm Very Busy found the rail in ninth and they have six furlongs to run. Then comes Palazzi with Web Slinger between horses. Wide is Woods and Water and in the early stages, Point Proven has dropped back to be last of 13. The opening quarter, the first two of nine furlongs. Fast pace on, 22.80 seconds. It's Strong Quality who's out there on the lead for the run to the half-mile pole. Strong Quality as Gigante makes a move with the rail. Johnny's Fireball running in third. Rising Empire fourth at Hamo's fifth. Beatbox in sixth. Irish Aces at ground saving seventh. I'm Very Busy in a lot of traffic eighth. Risk Manager's a wide ninth. Palazzi also up the inside trail held up there. Web Slinger in a tight spot. And then we trail back to Woods and Water and Point Proven remains last. Half mile in 47.33 seconds. Strong Quality clocks three quarters in 1 minute 11, 0.57 seconds. Gigante making a move now as they turn for home in the Muniz Memorial Classic. Gigante has taken the lead from Strong Quality through the final quarter of a mile with Adhamo. Johnny's Fireball toward the inside, charging his beatbox. And here's I'm Very Busy, who's storming home for Ired Ortiz Jr. They come past the 16th and to the lead. It's I'm Very Busy, and I'm Very Busy impressively. I'm Very Busy raced away to win the Muniz Memorial Classic by nearly five.
And it is I'm Very Busy getting the job done. 103 the winning buyer, 680 the winning mutual. Nice mutual for a single when usually you're trying to get even money, and this one you get double the odds, just above 2-1. And I mean, one with class, one by 3.25. It's usually you see under two lengths the usually winners in the turf racing. So when this one wins by this, super dominant.
Well, and especially given the trip that I'm very busy got, right, broke out of the gate, out of the 13 hole, and couldn't find a real way to the inside of the track. So Ortiz Irad had to keep pulling him back until, you know, if you look at the first call, the horse was 10th. So, I mean, that's such a huge disadvantage, right off the bat. Horse had to swing super wide, was basically in the middle of the track coming down the stretch, and easily got past, Gigante and, Webslinger to be able to win. Yeah. Like you said, the winning margin was 3.25. That was absolutely geared down. I'm Very Busy is going to be a nasty horse to deal with, moving forward.
I think as well too, just looking at the field and just the board, there were horses that people thought they had shots here. You know, obviously Webslinger 3-1, Strong Quality just a touch under 3-1. Like there were interesting shots people took in this race.
Quality took a ton of money, yeah, and a ton of late money. And my guess is because, you know, they were thinking exactly opposite of me, which was there isn't a ton of pace and this horse is going to be speed of the speed. And granted, Strong Quality absolutely was the speed of the speed, and absolutely buried the other speed horse. Johnny's Fireball finished last, and Rising Empire, who was third, on the outside of the two leaders, also faded to last. So, from that standpoint, Strong Quality did run a real bang up race, but you know, when we're talking about, you know, a race that is a mile and an eighth and your first quarter is 22, it's a huge problem. And especially given that this turf course has seen a lot of rain, over the past, few weeks, that 22-4 for a first quarter is brutal.
Yeah.
And really it didn't give Strong Quality a chance.
I think I'll take back what I was going to say. I think Strong Quality, especially with the fact too, you said with how fast the fractions were, maybe this one finishing fifth, you get kind of that fugazi area of where like, oh, this horse didn't hit the board, but ran a race probably good enough to hit the board and took so much money in this race. Maybe you can get, 4-1, 9-2 on this one in the next race and can finally, not face a class horse like I'm Very Busy. You can get the job done in the front end. I think Strong Quality might be a nice, solid horse to bet around next time. But let's move on to the last race of the pod, race number 12 from the fairgrounds. It's the Louisiana Derby, 1 3/16 miles on the dirt. I'm going to talk real quick about a couple horses in here, and obviously having Kevin Kilroy on all the time, we talk all about a lot of these horses. Track Phantom off a cold paced race last time out on the lead. For me, it's a strong pass. I've taken this horse before because 88, 89, 90, 89, very, very consistent. I want something a little bit different in this race. Took Catching Freedom coming off closing fractions and 87 in the slop in the Risen Star. The Risen Star race has come back so, so good. And this one was improving, 72, 77, 87, 87 again, but had that tough trip from the slop. I wonder if this one, might just finally be ready to take that step, that next step forward. I thought a horse on the outside, Common Defense, the 10 horse for Brian Hernandez and Kenny McPeak. Just that last race in the Rebel as well, just so much better than everything else this one's been running. And as we know, if you can find that 1 3-year-old that takes that big step forward, like Common Defense did to run second by 2 at 27-1, I thought we might see another little breakthrough here from Common Defense. So I went too deep in this race to try to get some win money here.
Yeah, so for me, I this was the one race that I really didn't see a whole lot separating a lot of these horses. So I really did spread pretty heavily in this race. For me, my top pick was the number 5, Catching Freedom. Everything you said is spot on. You know, that Risen Star has come back really well, and even, you know, looking at the form, you know, you have increasing form, you know, since the debut, and then you have those paired up buyers. And for me, as long as the form is continuing to better itself and you have those paired up buyers, I'm always going to anticipate a jump up. And especially given that we're pretty, you know, we're still early on in the 3-year-old career at the moment. You know, that jump up after that pairing is not going to be uncommon at all. So for me, I definitely used my top pick, number 5, Catching Freedom. I also used a lot of horses. I used number 2, Hall of Fame. You know, the Risen Star was a really bad race for Hall of Fame. Terrible trip. And after getting steadied, really just couldn't get its legs under him. And I thought that, you know, maybe the sloppy service just wasn't for him. So, going back to that, to the, maiden special weight winner, you know, in 94 buyer, you know, if he could get back to that race, that would put him in contention. Antiquarian, I thought, was an interesting horse. You know, coming off of the maiden win in the slop at Fairgrounds, the talk about some obscure pedigree on Antiquarian, but I thought had a really good chance to improve off of that race and really did it nicely. So I felt like there was a lot more left in the tank for that horse. You know, also looking at Honor Marie, I thought Honor Marie had zero shot given the slow pace and the Risen Star. And if we could get any amount of pace, then Honor Marie would be closing down the lane. I also used Common Defense. You know, like you said, that Rebel was a good race in coming back off of that. And then lastly, I did use Tuscan Gold, the Chad Brown horse. I thought that maiden special weight was actually really, really, really professional. Was able to sit and circle and draw off like a good thing in that Gulfstream Park race. So I wanted Tuscan Gold coming back. One of the horses I wanted zero to do with is Track Phantom. That slow pace and the Risen Star was the only reason why that horse was even close to, you know, beating Sierra Leone. And there were so many horses coming back in that from that race that had way worse trips that were against the pace. So overall, I wanted zero to do with Track Phantom in this race. I mean, the other thing you got to look at too is from a distance standpoint, you know, mile and 3/16, distance is not going to be your friend. And I think we found out, you know, a lot of these horses really aren't really willing to go the extra distance.
So I know you said you were spreading a lot in this race, but I kind of heard Catching Freedom. Is that kind of like me and you were on the same idea with the top pick there?
Yeah. My top pick was Catching Freedom for sure.
Catching Freedom, a consensus pick here in the last race for this podcast. Let's see if Catching Freedom can get it done for me and Marshall right now.
Hall of Fame with Antiquarian, who broke through the gate prior to the start, and now Track Phantom. With this early bid for Joel Rosario to take the early lead as they head toward the first turn, it's Track Phantom, who's emerged in front of Hall of Fame with Common Defense right there, Awesome Ruta in fourth, Antiquarian in fifth, and Tuscan Gold is sixth as they enter the first turn. Then comes Next Level, one off the rail is Real Man Violin, and they have 7 furlongs to run as these leaders go to the back of this historic New Orleans track. Anna Maria is racing outside of Agate Road, who settled with the rail, and Catching Freedom has dropped back to be 11th and last. The opening quarter covered in 23.49 seconds. So it's Track Phantom. Track Phantom dictates the pace here from Common Defense, who stays close to Track Phantom, who's allowed to dictate terms here for the run to the half-mile pole, with on the outside Tuscan Gold in the gold cap, and Hall of Fame is running in fourth. Awesome Root in the red cap in fifth. Then comes Antiquarian, a wide sixth. Next Level is seventh. Real Men Violin, eighth between horses, and six lengths from Tuscan Gold, who leads the Louisiana Derby field past the half mile. Then comes Anna Marie, still together with Agate Road, and the trailer remains Catching Freedom. Half mile in 48.33 seconds. Three quarters for Track Phantom, 1 minute 12.54 seconds. It's Track Phantom who leads coming toward the quarter pole, but Common Defense has been right there with the front runner. It's Track Phantom and Common Defense. They're a neck apart as they turn for home. Antiquarian is sweeping outside of Tuscan Gold. Then toward the inside, Awesome Ruta. Hall of Fame down there with the rail. Catching Freedom is unwinding on the extreme outside through the final quarter of a mile. And it's Common Defense toward the inside. Track Phantom determined. Track Phantom sticking that neck out. Just holds Common Defense. Moving up Tuscan Gold. And here comes Catching Freedom, who's charging for Flavian Pratt. They come past the 16th. Last to first. It's Catching Freedom to win the Louisiana Derby.
And it was Catching Freedom getting the job done. 97 the winning buyer, 860 the winning mutual. Listen, it's kind of like in the last race, you had a 680 winner, now we have an 860 winner. This one took a little bit of money. Track Phantom at 2-1 is just an absolute snooze fest if you see the way this horse ran last time. And listen, improved again up to a 94, but just that was the biggest leap we've seen in, you know, four or five races. So this one might just be a little bit too late for now. Catching Freedom, it's like we kind of talked back at the beginning, when you finally handicap a race properly, but you guess a horse will jump up, or not so much guess, but like this one just felt like this was the spot. This one was going to show an improved effort and did. 97, the winning buyer. Like we said, you get that nice solid 3-1 price. Anna Marie runs just like you had kind of said, running, you know, to come down and get second. I think overall in this race, you know, for me, Common Defense didn't run that well, but at 10-1, you know, kind of splits the field, and I can look forward to that one next time out as well. But Catching Freedom, really solid race here.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I think, you know, going back to the comment about pace, if you look at the last race for Track Phantom, Track Phantom ran 49-4 for the first half in the Risen Star,
yeah.
Like just snail's pace. Coming into this race, you know, if you look at the fractions, Track Phantom ran a little over a second and a half faster.
Mm-hmm.
And that was clearly his undoing. Common Defense, who was right on the pace there, my guess is probably doesn't want to go this far. But certainly the pace didn't hold up here at all. I thought the runs by Catching Freedom, Anna Marie, and Tuscan Gold, obviously definitely eye catching. I don't necessarily know how good these horses are, but you know, to that point, I think that when you're able to make that sort of big wide sweeping move alongside other horses that are doing the same thing, and you're able to not only beat them but win them going away, you know, with just some urging, I do like that from a visual standpoint. Do I think that Catching Freedom is going to win the Kentucky Derby after that? No, but I don't. The two things to keep in mind with the Kentucky Derby is the distance is the undoing for a lot of those animals. And I don't feel like I have a distance question with Catching Freedom after this race. I think that Tuscan Gold, although made a good run, I question the distance for this horse. And Anna Marie made a heck of a run to try to keep up with Catching Freedom, but ultimately was not able to keep up with Catching Freedom and was fading towards the line. So for me, if I was going to use anyone in this race, I would probably use Catching Freedom and no one else coming out of it as far as a Derby pick is concerned. You know, time will tell. That first Saturday in May is comes up real quick for a lot of these horses, so we'll definitely see.
I think you just brought up a huge point too, and people just love to fall in love with Derby horses. You know, even as a 2-year-old, they're like, okay, this horse, if it just has a clean trips next year, it's going to get some points and it's going to be great. And I think for me, I've never been that type, like Derby futures, all that stuff. Maybe every once in a while I'll put a flyer if I like connections and I like a horse runs really well, like in one of the first, you know, whatever they are, the 10-point, 20-point preps. But at this point, like, just wait for the chips to fall where they are before you pick a Derby horse. It's always fun when you can find, you know, Matt Brunier found Orb at whatever it was, 50-1. We ended up going off the favorite in that sloppy Derby years ago. These races are so tough on these horses, and there's a reason why we see horses not go on the Derby trail or not, you know, they come back and they run so well in the Clark, you know, if they don't run in the Derby, or if they run in the Derby and they run so poorly, and then you see them come back in the second half and run so well. I agree with you. I just think that you can take certain ideas like in this race and just prove how bad certain 2-1 shots are. And if the favor is made and you do not like a horse, and for some reason you're like, I don't know why they like it, but I don't second guess yourself. You will be wrong sometimes, but, and as we all know, the public is the best. I think when I did the Santa Anita podcast last week, they're picking 46% out there, some crazy number. You need to be able to be different than the public. And in this race, you're different just enough. And you can be solidly happy with this. You know, some favorites will run second, even though it might be a bad second. This horse didn't even hit the board. So just really, really solid play against in this race. And for me, like you had said, Catching Freedom, for me, probably not going to be on my Derby board. But I know horses like Track Phantom that may have points and may decide to go are just going to be insta-tosses. So now instead of 20 horses, we're talking about, you know, hopefully you get down to 15 before you even really start handicapping.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, again, you know, I can't stress this enough. You know, looking at Twitter after this race, there was a whole lot of steam on Catching Freedom. Like, oh, that's my Derby pick. That's my Derby horse. Just chill.
Chill.
May will come, and there will be horses that won't be there. And it's okay, but you know, you have to try to be as subjective as possible when you're doing these things. You can say that the run from Catching Freedom was impressive. It absolutely was, right? When you're able to circle the field and gallop out with ease in hand, that is definitely eye catching. But you have to take it with a grain of salt and make sure that you're putting all of those pieces together.
I can't agree with you more with that. And with that last statement, we are going to end this podcast. I do want to thank my special guest, Marshall Sterling, for coming on, talking all things fairgrounds with myself. Before we let Marshall go, I will let you guys know that also I'm having Kevin Kilroy on to have like a part two of this podcast with a couple different races, but he will also be going over the main event that we had just talked about, that being the Twin Spires Louisiana Derby. But Marshall, anything going on? I know it's not Saratoga season yet, but I know a lot of people look forward to those weather reports. Anything going on in the pipeline?
Yeah, no. For me, I am preparing for the birth of our second child, our daughter is expected to arrive the first Saturday in May. So, I'm prepping for that as best as possible. And so I apologize for the sporadic weather pieces out there. I'm going to try to be a little more consistent on that front. But you know, other than the expectation of my daughter coming on Kentucky Derby Day, not too much more down the pipeline.
I want to thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
All right, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
I want to thank everyone who listens to this podcast and the rest of the podcast on the In the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Marshall Sterling, for coming on and talking all things fairground racing with myself. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Florentel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl. We will see you next time.